fellow victims.
What a connection by Mahal! Orton is down!
I can almost taste it. It's the need to see you die.
Calling for it one more time. Randy Orton might be out cold here. Can Jinder Mahal put away the Viper?
But you had it made. What is your final shock surprise?
Tonight it's going to be 25% white podcast. Well, no, 37.5%. 37.5%.
Correct.
I didn't count Hayes's half.
Exactly.
Thank you. Give me
37.5.
Give me my credit. I sure use it when I get pulled off. I'm like, wait a second. You can't write that ticket. You can't
have
write
you
that
ticket.
Exactly.
The back of your license says half white.
I clearly marked other. You cannot give me this ticket. All right, so guys, we are here every Tuesday night, faithfully. Well, I am at least. JB is to D Will. You know, D Will comes and goes as he sees fit.
I'll be here.
But you know, since it's just us three here, as always. You know, we never have a fourth guest at all. You know, I was thinking, you know, maybe we should add a fourth host, but. Then I was like, no, fuck it. Who would we add? And I thought about adding Redneck, actually. And I was listening to the Red Zone. I'm like, you know what? I don't know. After that sketchy black guy comment, I just think I'm done with Wrestling Redneck. You know, if he was just to pop in on this podcast right now, we would have some serious issues.
There's a guy named... my name's Blue Neck.
What are you, his cousin?
I don't know. You kind of sound like Redneck.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually incapacitated right now. So you just call me Blue Neck. I'm here to do the show tonight, guys.
Well, you know, I mean, if you have blue in your name, I can't really keep you out of a show called the Blue Zone if your name's Blue Neck. So, you know, I mean, fuck it. Let's talk some SmackDown.
Welcome to SmackDown Live.
So this is where the big boys play, huh?
This is my show.
It is your boy, the prodigal one, JB here.
Let's go ahead and get into this Blue Zone.
My name's Blue Neck.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Hey, it's me. It's Misery.
I am the elite. I am the greatest. I am the phenomenal.
Wrestling World Podcast Network. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the world famous Blue Zone is in the building, here to review SmackDown Live. You got your boy CEO Hayes here. The prodigal one JB is with me as always, my right hand man. JB, what's going on?
What's going on, CEO Hayes? What is going on, WWPN world? Ready to talk about this shitty
I have an issue. Let's start this podcast off the right way. Your very first podcast you ever did on WWPN. You said WWPN universe. Now we're downgraded to the WWPN world. How do you go from a universe to a world, JB?
No, universe is because I didn't want to be the same as WWE. We're better than WWE. And I don't want to say the galaxy, because I think someone else uses that as well. So this was what was left. And then I found out NJPW, their subscription thing is called NJPW World. But at that point, I was like, fuck it, I'm already out of things. So I'm going to just let this roll.
All right, so we also got the miserable one in the building, Misery Williams, Dimitri, as I've been calling you by your legal name. I don't know if you've paid attention like the last three podcasts. What's going on, D Will?
Yo.
Damn. Okay, well, and then as you could, if you could not tell from the intro, he's not actually Blue Neck. It is the Wrestling Redneck in the building. Wrestling, what's going on?
Going good tonight. Why you got to stooge the gimmick off? I could have been Wrestling Blue Neck with a W. Could have made a whole another Twitter account. Could have been going on with the gimmick. But nope, got to stooge it off.
Hey, you know, I mean, what can I say? Every once in a while, you need to just stooge that off. It's a good release, Redneck. You know, you gotta kind of get it out there sometimes. You can't keep it all bottled up. But let's get into talking about some SmackDown Live, because I'm... I was the best thing about when an episode of wrestling is bad and I have to podcast right afterwards is those are honestly usually our best podcasts because we just go the fuck off. But we open up tonight with what can be only said to be D Will's segment of the night, in which John Cena comes out to talk. D Will, John Cena, you go hand in hand, neck and neck, one would say. What do you think about this opening segment with John Cena?
Honestly, this show for me dragged out so long, I forgot what the fuck Cena said. It's just, who's he fighting, Corbin? By the way, I don't like Corbin's new music. Maybe I have to get used to it. But Cena, he hasn't said anything that he hasn't been saying for the last, since he got here. Shit, so whatever. I like Cena, though.
So, I mean, John Cena said, we talked about how hard Nakamura hits and the fact that he thought he was going to go on to face Jinder Mahal and become the 17th time champion. He put Nakamura over very strong. Baron Corbin came over, and this is something that last week when Billy Ray Valentine we all talked about too. John Cena is probably going to put Corbin over here. And this is what John Cena has been doing. Since he's come back, he's been putting people over. Billy Ray made the good point that he usually gets it back. But the fact is that even though he's willing to put this younger people over, just talent that needs to go over in WWE, newer talent to the company, I think it's important to talk about there. But, you know, we get Corbin coming out. They're actually moving forward with that being the program. Daniel Bryan makes a match between the two at SummerSlam. So, JB, as I come to you to talk about the opening segment, let's talk about that additional thing. Is Baron Corbin going over on John Cena?
Yeah, I think Baron Corbin is going over on John Cena. My problem is I've always been one to criticize John Cena, but it doesn't feel right having Baron Corbin go over on him. I don't feel Baron Corbin is on that level yet. Can he get there possibly a couple years from now? Possibly, but I just don't feel like he's there right now. Corbin has been an up and down thing for me. As anyone who listened to the Blue Zone knows, you were really one of the guys who talked me into, kind of watching him a little closer. And he started doing some good things, and then he kind of fell off for me again. And this Money in the Bank, the whole thing has been crappy, but that's usually how it goes when you have the case. So
the contract. I don't know. The contract. Not the case. Come on, get with the lingo, right, man. Right. We don't want Vince to sanction us.
But here's the only reason why I think he may not go over. There's a strong possibility he may cash in at the end of the night. So I could see John Cena going over, and then Corbin cashing in at the end of the night.
I like that idea. Redneck, your thoughts here?
Well, I actually like to see that he's going from Nakamura over to John Cena next. That's definitely a showing that WWE's got the faith in him to go with these top name guys, and that's kind of a nice rub that they're giving Baron Corbin. I do see Baron Corbin going over John Cena in this feud, just again to kind of give that push to Baron Corbin and make the fact that he's holding that Money in the Bank briefcase more important to the people watching the show. I'm starting to fall in line with a lot of people that think he's going to cash in on Nakamura. I don't want to see it. I want to see Nakamura have a healthy reign and him make it through and possibly go against AJ for the world title. Maybe they do a USA title versus world title. But I definitely see Baron Corbin going over Cena in all of this.
Well, yeah, I agree with you, too. And I think that, you know, all this talk about Nakamura saying he's starting his dynasty, we get a lot of talk with that. And usually when they talk about it that up front, it doesn't happen. So I do, man, and call it Billy Ray convincing me because I hadn't thought about it before then. Now I'm starting to see it all makes sense. If you look at the total story that could be told between Baron Corbin and Nakamura, and also you want to get this guy over as a big-time heel, what better way than put him over on the person that we all want to see as the world champion? So I wouldn't be surprised if he cashes in on Nakamura at SummerSlam, and be prepared for that podcast because I'm going to be drunk and I'm going to be talking shit.
Well, even him working with John Cena is huge for Baron Corbin because, you know, John picks who he wants to work with. So John's looking at creative and saying, hey, let's put a hold or let insert me somehow in this storyline because I want to work with this kid.
Yeah, and the thing is that if you look at Baron Corbin, since he's been on SmackDown, he had that time period where he was in there with the main eventers. He shows up when he's in there with bigger name talent. Like for say what you want about his character, say what you want, because when he's in the mid card, his matches are kind of boring. But he showed up every time he was on the SmackDown main event. And I tend to believe what's the saying is that iron sharpens iron. That's what you want. If you want him to become that heel or be in that role, what better way than just throw him in and see if he can sink or swim? I mean, ultimately, how he comes out of this is on him if he can step up and really show out and being in there. Like, you're in there with John Cena. If you want Vince or creative or anyone to notice you, this is your time. So hopefully he can do it.
There is another layer that nobody is talking about. And with the WWE, is always a possibility. We're always talking about, hey, after Nakamura wins, will Corbin cash in? Will he cash in? But what if Nakamura doesn't even win? I know it's a very outside chance, but WWE is always one, especially the SmackDown brand, is one to always surprise. Is there a chance Jinder goes over? Because that would basically solidify Jinder's title run by him beating Nakamura. Whether it's clean or not, doesn't matter.
Well, see, the thing is that I get what you're saying, and that would solidify it, but do they want to give – do they see Jinder as something long-term to where you want to give him that first victory over Nakamura? I don't think so.
No way.
So, no yeah, way. I would see if they really see something big and long-term in Baron Corbin, I see them giving it to him over Jinder Mahal.
Well, question for you. Isn't the India tour coming up? Because they could have – I mean, think about it. Nakamura
September,
and right? – And Jinder kind of still doing it over in India for house shows. You've got the Asian market over there in India. So you got both those guys that can do well over there in terms of drawing people to come watch the event. Because over there in China, you're going to get the Japanese crowd. You're going to get that side of the world that's going to come to India to watch these shows possibly.
Well, also with that same statement, I can see Nakamura winning, Corbin not cashing. And when they go to India, it's about the chase for Jinder in India. Because he's going to be the babyface, yeah. Obviously, in India.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, yeah, that, you make a good point there.
And you could have him win it back. That. I mean, they've already shown that they're willing to change titles at house shows. So who knows if we don't get a show in India where Jinder wins it in front of the hometown crowd, basically.
And then Nakamura wins it back in Japan?
Who knows?
There you go. We see we made sense. This is what we do. We make sense out of WWE booking so you guys don't have to think. That's what we do for our listeners. Last night on Raw, it was we watch Raw so you don't have to. Now we're decoding. We're cracking the code between WWE booking. Let's keep going. Let's move forward. The Usos, who, while I'm watching this is, and I'm just sitting here watching the show, and I'm like, they're on their day one-ish. Technically, if they were on their day one-ish, how would you feel about the Usos coming out in diapers and bottles? How would you feel about that? That's day one-ish. How would you feel about that, JB? Would that go over with you?
Well, technically, day one-ish, they're butt naked. Really, you know, depending on what Fatu was doing at the time, if he had any clothes on them or was giving them food or he was like, you know, doing the stinky face or whatever. I don't know, man, but that's actually really deep thinking. And again, that's what you get on the Blue Zone.
Oh, man.
Can I just say one thing before we dive into the analytics of this match? Because I've been wanting to tell someone this because I found this out. I'm going to go a little bit off topic for a second, but one of my favorite promos ever, Redneck and CEO might know this, Duo maybe not because you're a little bit younger, but one of my favorite segments ever, it's Shawn Michaels and Triple H in the back somewhere, and Triple H is telling Shawn Michaels, hey, you don't go enough, and you're not, what's that? Sorry, I thought someone said something, but anyway, he's saying that Triple H is telling Shawn Michaels that he needs to go more overboard. He doesn't go overboard. And Shawn Michaels is like, what are you talking about? I always go overboard. So Shawn Michaels is like, watch. And he starts super kicking everybody. And then there's this guy that comes up, and the guy is like, HBK is like, hey, what's your name? He's like, Stan. And he just super kicks him in the face, and he starts super kicking everybody. Please tell me you guys remember that promo.
Oh, I absolutely remember that. That was just in 2007 or something.
Okay, hold on, D-Will. CEO, do you remember that promo?
I do.
Redneck, do you remember that promo?
Yeah, vaguely, but yeah, I do.
I want you guys to go after this show, go on YouTube, watch that promo. Stan is Ty Dillinger, 100% confirmed. Blew my mind.
Well, he's been with the company like 12 years. He worked ECW. He's been with the company forever, so that doesn't even surprise me.
I was shocked because it's like one of my favorite promos, and I never even realized. My brother told me the other day, and I was like, what?
Shout out to Q, who will be replacing JB the moment I fire him. Q will be a new member of the Blue Zone.
Hashtag unemployment line.
That's one of the best segments ever, in my opinion.
It is. That was a great segment. Great segment. But in something that was an okay segment, we get the Usos versus Sami Zayn and Ty Dillinger. Why this pairing? Like, I don't, get me wrong, they're both talented.
They're in Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that makes sense then. All right, let me shut the fuck up. But let's keep it moving.
If I'm Ty Dillinger, I'm so terrified right now because the fact that I have to eat the pin over Sami Zayn, like, where the fuck is my career going?
Not even the submission.
Or the submission to tap out, sorry. Over Sami Zayn, that's not good.
You know what? I just thought about something. We have Sami Zayn, Ty Dillinger, and Kevin Owens on the same roster. Let's get Team Canada in this bitch. Make it happen.
And Jinder.
Oh, yeah, but he's pulling the whole India gimmick right now. Even though he's Canadian, they're not acknowledging that. He has 3 billion people on his shoulder. But nonetheless, this tag match, I have nothing left to say other than what we already said. It was a match. Usos, good as always on the mic. Good after the match. That's where the good stuff comes in at, is that they get attacked by the New Day. Overall, I like the way they progressed the story back a little far. I like the New Day coming out and getting their ish back in, but the match, I don't have much to say about it. Redneck, what were your thoughts here?
I enjoyed when the New Day came in from behind, when Big E came out by himself and started dancing, and the Usos were kind of trying to figure out what was going on, and they just came in and they got stomped pretty viciously, kind of in a heelish way. It kind of reminded me of a way like the Usos would probably have jumped them in the back or something like that. I enjoyed watching the combination of Sami Zayn and Ty Dillinger. I too think that they should keep them together, do something with them. If they don't have plans for either one of them, you know, pair them up a little bit more. It was quite an exciting combination to see. And even though they were in Canada, and that's why they pretty much put those two together to get a huge pop from the crowd. All in all, I'm looking forward to see more from New Day and the Usos.
D-Will?
Well, surprising finish. I didn't expect a submission finish, but it's always good to see something new. What was that? A half Boston crab that he used? Something. Four-leaf clover? Something. I don't know. Looked good.
It was a submission maneuver.
It's the tequila sunrise.
And he almost didn't put it. Yeah, he didn't even put it on right almost. Did you not see him kind of playing with his arm?
Yeah, but it was the tequila sunrise. Come on now.
The New Day, I mean, they kind of look like a bunch of punks attacking the Usos 3-on-2. I didn't really like that, and they're supposed to be the baby faces. I don't really understand that, but other than that, I guess it progressed the story and you keep it pushing.
JBZ.
Yeah, for me, I have no comment about the match after this stuff. So, kind of what D-Will said, at first, I'm like, wait a minute, these guys are the baby faces. This is a heelish thing to do. But then after I thought about it, regardless if you're a nice guy or not, if you have enough pent-up anger, you're going to do some shit like that. And actually, it was welcoming for me because normally you see New Day doing a lot of goofy shit. But this was more aggression from them, and I loved it. I loved every second of it. It was just total aggression. Like, I haven't seen Kofi like that in forever. I don't think I've ever seen Xavier Woods with that much aggression. So I enjoyed it. I like that look.
I think it goes against their character to do that. That's my... If they were always on the... 3-on-2 assaults like they were when they first started. When they first started, they were all about that, but now this is a whole brand new reanimation of these guys. They're throwing booty to the crowd and stuff, so these guys...
But if someone keeps on messing with you over and over and over, eventually you're going to just crack, because that's just human nature.
Yeah.
True.
But, you know, that it was what it was there, but I'm watching this Fashion Peak segment, and all I could think about is, JB, did this one at least get over with you a little bit? Like, come on now. We had the return of Fandango, finally. He was abducted by aliens, which I have a funny booking for that, but what were your thoughts on the segment?
I only liked one part of the segment, and anybody who knows me knows I'm a throwback dude, and the one part of the segment I loved was fucking Arn Anderson out of nowhere. I totally popped for it. I'm like, what the hell? This dude coming out of nowhere. And I love the part. I don't remember if it was Tyler Breeze or the other one. It was like, oh, what'd you do to Tully? And he was like, what? Tully Blanchard was his own old brainbuster partner. But it was kind of a double reference. So outside of that, obviously everyone knows I hate the Fashion Police or Fashion Files or whatever the fuck they're called. I just want nothing to do with them. But if they keep bringing back old legends like this, I'll watch them. I'll put aside the other 2 minutes to see 30 seconds of an old legend. No problem.
D-Will?
I'm usually with JB with the Bashing the Fashion File segment, but this is the best one they had, and I enjoyed every bit of it. I really had no complaints with it. I loved it from beginning to end. From Arn coming in to the donuts and Ascension wanting the pie and the anal probe line. Big pop out of all of it.
Redneck.
Come on, y'all act like Arn Anderson's not in the back already and traveling with these guys to every show. They have many legends back there that they could put out there and put on TV, and they chose the right legend to put the Fashion Files over. Arn Anderson was the Hoss of the Four Horsemen and of the Brainbusters, and he's probably the most underrated member of the Four Horsemen because, you know, Ric Flair overshadows everybody because he's the great, but Arn Anderson was there protecting Rick most of Rick's career. And I really enjoyed the anal probe line when he first said it was beads or getting anal probed and stuff. And it was a good segment overall. And I haven't gotten to watch too many of these Fashion Files segments. And I hear you guys bash them, but when I hear CEO talk about them, I enjoy them vicariously through him. So I don't see why you guys bash this stuff. I mean, these guys are doing something. They might not be the best in the ring, but they're doing what they can do, and they're really damn good at these comedy acts.
Yeah, and I enjoyed this. Now, the funny thing, so Fandango says he was abducted by aliens. And my only thing, and with the whole anal probe, I'm thinking they're going illegal aliens. I'm thinking the Shining Stars are the one that I abducted Fandango. What are your thoughts there?
That would be interesting. Well, are they still with the company though?
Yeah.
Because didn't they ask for their release?
No, one of them's injured, I believe.
Okay.
Illegal aliens. Keep in mind that I said that. So when it comes out, even if it's not the Shining Stars, like it may be the returning Lucha Dragons. I don't know, but it's gonna be illegal aliens. Like they use that alien line for a reason. Unless Eric Rowan and Luke Harper are coming back with alien gimmicks, which that I would pop just as hard for that.
Well, are you trying to say they were are you trying to say they were pushing for Rey Mysterio for a reason?
There you go.
Trying to put Rey in that role.
There you go. Illegal aliens. But you know, and if you look during the segment, they had they have their board and they had a drawing up in the top right, and it says, "Have you seen this man?" And it's like a stick figure drawing with a guy with a big face, beard, and long hair. I'm thinking that's our Easter egg, that it may be Luke Harper. Or is this a legal aliens thing? I'm placing right now, I'm 50-50. I'm hedging my bet. But it's going to be one of those two things. What anyone else's thoughts on the illegal aliens?
Well, have you noticed that Luke Harper has been tweeting stuff with Sin Cara? I mean, is Harper even on Raw, or is he still on SmackDown?
Well, according to what I've heard, the two are tag teaming in house shows. And actually, Luke Harper tweeted, I don't know if it was Luke Harper, but I saw a picture online where Luke Harper was wearing a mask as if he was a luchador. So they've been tagging on the house show scene.
So maybe they've paired Rowan up with someone else if they're going to do a different style gimmick. So it could be someone else with Rowan. I mean, because he is a decent worker enough in a tag team, and he takes the pins very well. But I mean, that could just throw something out. I mean, I don't know if they've got anybody in NXT that they would move up, or anybody that they've signed, or maybe just somebody that we've never even heard of coming into this gimmick that they might throw under a mask.
Why is Eric Rowan still employed? I mean, what the fuck? Why?
He's a good hand. He's like wrestling said, when you need somebody to eat
the
pin.
If he made it to the WWE, he's clearly better than a lot of the they see something in him, because they wouldn't just go and scrape up. Just
even Marie made it to the WWE, so I don't subscribe to that logic, because they signed some people that's just like, what the fuck?
Well, you see it all the time,
Jake Ellsworth.
But now he's just a pure comedy gimmick. That's don't even go there with me about James Ellsworth. He has done exactly what he was hired to do this whole entire time that he was in the WWE, and they've got their use out of that man. And he
struck a nerve.
Honestly,
I get to hear y'all bash James Ellsworth all the time on here too, and we get to see this man later on tonight in all the glory that this man is. But what I'm saying is, give the man a chance. He's done what he's needed to do for the WWE, and I mean, I can't say any more about it. I mean, I see Hayes is agreeing with me. I see that look on Hayes' face. Well, Hayes secretly enjoys the Ellsworth.
You know, I enjoy Ellsworth. It just depends on how they use him. And, you know, D, what you said, talked about him wrestling. Go back and watch that match with AJ Styles. James Ellsworth is not a bad wrestler at all. He's really not. Like, that's the thing, is that if they really wanted to put him in like a cruiserweight division to have him seriously go out there and wrestle, I think he can do it. It's just the guy looks like such an asshole that you have to have him in a comedy role, and he nails it so good. But I don't think James Ellsworth is a bad wrestler at all.
The yeah, only I never issue really had I had with him was that he was so spotlighted in the main event at the time with Ambrose and Styles. That's, other than that, I have no problem with him. I enjoy his current. I really enjoy his current role right now. When he says "duh," huge pop out of me. But when he first came in and he was damn near in the main event title picture, I didn't like that at all. It's just how they're using it. I think they're doing a great job with him right now.
So for me, it was sort of the same way for me. I didn't have at first an issue with him being in the title scene because I understand what they were doing. He was red hot. They were trying to milk it as much as they could. But my problem with them was what they happen to a lot. And they already made their money with him, but they kept on doing it. And, dude, I understand him being part of the roster. And I'm fine with his role right now with Carmella. But they left him way too long in that main event scene, at least 2 or 3 weeks longer than they really should have. That was my only issue. But since he's came off that spotlight, I've been fine with him. He's an idiot. He's a comedy act, and I'm fine with that. And what he's doing with Carmella, I'm fine with. And I actually enjoyed what he did tonight as well, because it was an asshole thing to do. And that's what, you know, he's that asshole that you love to hate.
Yeah, I mean, that's his role there. He's there to help add heat to Carmella, and he does it very well. Like, he does. He executes his role. What they want him to go out there and do, he's not failing at it in any means. And for everyone who has an issue with him getting involved in the women's Money in the Bank match, you know what? We got two great ladder matches out of it, and we got a hell of an angle. Like, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing, at least in my opinion. But speaking of Carmella and James Ellsworth, there was a match that Carmella had, and I know we're kind of skipping some because there's a hell of a segment that happened before then that we will get to. But Carmella, what did you guys think about this match? JB, I already see you shaking your head.
My problem with I don't even know where to start. The match, I don't even care about the match. I care about, first of all, this match should have never been booked, number one. Number two, if they won these two in the ring, there should have been some sort of tag team or a three-way. Number three, the fact that Carmella won in the way she won. If I'm Carmella, and we're just talking about psychology here for a second, and that's missing in today's product, Naomi's down, out for the count. Why is she not just cash it in right there and win the friggin' match and win the title?
I had that same thought.
It didn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't, because you had her down. You got the money. The ref's already there. Tell James Ellsworth to give you the briefcase, hand it to the ref. There you go. 1, 2, 3, you're now the champion. Yes, fuck it. But Redneck, your thoughts?
I mean, I like JB at the end of that match thought that she should have cashed in right there and pinned her because she was clearly hurt from taking the kick to the face. I actually enjoyed watching Carmella in this match. The little top rope segment they had over there where she was trying to flip her with her feet over her head, and then she went back over there and was trying to get her back down again before James pushed her off. That was a really interesting segment, and Carmella is actually a lot more athletic than a lot of people think and probably give her credit for wrestling-wise. She's definitely a lot better than Lana watching that mess in the ring.
Do we have to talk about that match, by the way? Like, does anybody have just the desire to talk about...
I want to add one statement about that match is because Charlotte was like smiling the whole time, like she wasn't going to take this match seriously. And I understand she's a face, and you can make it seem like, oh, she's just being a face, but it ruined me trying to take Lana seriously because I could tell that Charlotte wasn't really taking it seriously.
I think why should she?
How it was meant to be portrayed.
Yeah, go ahead, D-Will. Go ahead. Anything else to add to either of these two matches we're talking about? We're kind of getting it two for right now.
Well, the Carmella match, yeah, I agree with everything you guys said. Why didn't she cash in? Doesn't make any sense. With the Carmella-Lana match, I mean, yes, Lana was supposed to be made to look like the rookie that doesn't stand a chance, and she didn't. So I think that they did that right and correctly. Another comment, Charlotte looked very good tonight.
Yes,
she doesn't typically draw my eye, but tonight, she was smoking.
From the neck down.
You know, that is a problem for me. It's a problem for me because, JB, me and you have talked. We have a throwback podcast. I love Ric Flair. I spent a majority of my childhood loving Ric Flair, even though he was an old bastard even then. She looks so much like Ric Flair that it just, I can't unsee it. Like, I just, it's a taller Ric Flair walking out there. That's all I see.
Me too. I'm the same way. And the only thing I want to say about this match is, again, this was another really weird booking. I understand what they're trying to do, and Lana's like kind of in that underdog role, but she doesn't need to be in the underdog role. She's the heel in this match. She shouldn't be an underdog. In addition to that, the booking, and I even tweeted out, it's like The Rock versus Barry Horowitz. I mean, you have like the best person on the roster versus the worst person on the roster as far as female division goes on SmackDown. So I don't understand what the point of this booking was. I was even more confused with Lana and Nia Jax exchange in their back. So much like a lot of tonight, I was just confused at what was going on. I know I'm usually senile, but this is beyond senile levels.
Well, you're still confused right now because it wasn't Nia Jax in the back talking to
exactly.
Lana.
It was Tamina. It was Tamina, but exactly, the thing got me screwed up more than I usually am.
Well, what do you think is going to go on with that back segment that happened, though? Because Lana was, I guess, Lana's going to try to make Tamina ravishing? Is that, and Tamina's going to make Lana more aggressive and violent?
I am 100% convinced that they don't have a fucking clue what they're going to do. That's kind of what it seemed to be. They have no idea whatsoever. They're just doing... They'll probably be on their separate ways next week. Like, honestly, they don't know what they're doing. There's no plan. There's no thought put into this. They're trying something not working.
But they're gonna glow up Tamina, though.
To make this remotely even close to being interesting, Lana should come out next week and be like, listen, I know what your dad did. I know what he did. I know he killed the girl. And then go off with that.
That's what they should do. If they have the balls to not, she doesn't even have to say, I know your dad killed the girl. Like, you know, I know the history of what happened with your family. I know what you went through. Just that alone, I would lose my shit. That would be hilarious.
That would be the hottest segment in WWE right now.
That's hilarious. But I guarantee you, you're going to see Tamina coming out in like a dress and something sexy. Be sexy and quit being this tomboyish Tamina. I guarantee you that's what they're going to try to work with her working with Lana.
She doesn't have the look for that. I don't want to see no football player in a dress.
You know, no, she did the whole, when they took they had like a photo shoot on the beach before, and no, she can do it. It's just, it takes a lot of coaxing. You could tell, like, she has to have somebody
like
back there.
She looks like Jimmy Snuka, Charlotte looks like Ric Flair.
Yeah.
It's the same issue that Hayes has with Charlotte that you guys have with Tamina. You look at her and you see the man on top of the cage with his fingers in the position ready to jump off that thing.
Oh man, I wish he would jump off of that on me. Nonetheless, let's move on. We're gonna keep going.
I like Tamina though. Don't give my comments misconstrued. I thoroughly enjoy Tamina.
So we got a segment with Shane McMahon, AJ Styles and Kevin Owens, and because I got so caught up in an idea I had in my head, I'm not going to break this down. I'm going to pass this one over to my brother JB because I just know he's going to knock this out, because I want to be able to sit back on this one and I'm going to blow your mind with story time with CEO Hayes making its return right here tonight, only here on the Blue Zone. Go ahead, JB.
Well, you set me up for failure. I don't really have much on this, honestly. Because at this point, I was already so pissed off with what we were getting already that the segment was okay. But I have to say the funniest part or the best part of the segment for me was when AJ, what was it? Was it a Pele kick? Is that what he did to Shane?
Yeah.
So when he Pele kicked Shane, the look on Kevin Owens' face and laughing, I literally said out loud, what an asshole. But I was smiling and laughing when I did it because he was just laughing. And I don't know, it worked so well. So I'm actually hyped for this match, and I'm hyped for Shane's involvement. I love the fact that they were talking about some of Shane's old refereeing stuff. I don't understand why they pushed Montreal Screwjob. They did at least two or three times tonight in different segments. The crowd is not going to go over because they're in friggin' Toronto, for Christ's sake. So why the hell is the crowd going to pop? When we're in America and we're in Chicago, they're not talking about New York. It's the same thing. It's a different state, just because it's the same country doesn't mean they got to pop. Yeah, that's all I got to say on that.
Yeah, I made the same comment in the chat about the Montreal Screwjob thing. I enjoyed this segment. I like that they went back and showed AJ, like, hey, you're going to trust this guy? He's the one that threw your head through the window. You know, if you really going to trust him? And then they talked about Shane's mishaps and everything that he's done. Also, JB, you didn't mention this, but did you guys notice that Kevin Owens actually healed on his own country when he came out? He had some. So that's the great heel work of Kevin Owens, is coming out and actually healing on the Canadians that he, you know, the people that he loves. It's great. I don't know what to expect from their match, though. I mean, I don't know if Shane's going to call it down the middle. I don't know what is going to happen exactly. But again, like JB said, I enjoyed the asshole ways of Kevin Owens as he was laughing hysterically after AJ Pele kicked Shane in the face. Hayes, I got a question for you. Would you let any of us throw your head through a car window if it paid off an angle?
Yeah, sure. Of course. Why not?
Would you jump off a Hell in a Cell to hit JB with an elbow?
You just bounce right off of me.
Especially JB. Especially
JB. So much padding?
No, I mean, yeah, that's part of it. But no, I mean, it's just because I know JB's like a lifelong wrestling fan. He would know how to sell the shit out of it. Like, if I did that to Bello, as much of a wrestling fan Bello is, I would kill Bello. Bello would be dead. No, it wouldn't be no selling. Bello would be dead. Dead. And Josh would just be looking at me on my way down and just, you know what? I'm over, and just sidestep the shit out of.
And then Josh would stand up and be like, yeah, fuck boy.
Exactly. Loser. Nerd. Josh is the club. But go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm done. You let D Will go, and then I'm ready to listen to story time.
All right, go ahead, D Will.
Two things out of this segment. I liked how they went back to AJ Styles putting Shane's head through the car door. I'm like, wow, that was a pretty vicious spot. And now he's going to be refereeing this match. And AJ Styles is the babyface now. Cheering this guy who just did this to Shane? Wow, okay. The difference a couple of months makes. But also, I didn't like that they showed the clip of Shane and his past refereeing stuff. Because honestly, for me, all that did was make me want to watch the network and watch the old stuff. It just made me remember the old stuff. And not, it kind of, for me, the old stuff is what drew me in. Like, I can't wait to go to the network and watch that. And I'm not really thinking about the SummerSlam match that they're going to have. For me.
Like, you know who just got excited? You know who just got excited? Vince McMahon, because that's exactly what he wants. Oh, shit, that was the Attitude Era. Damn, how could I watch that? Oh, yeah. WWE Network for $9.99.
Just $9.99. Kevin Owens even made a point to say it after they got done doing it. He didn't say the $9.99 part, but he definitely shilled the network after they showed those clips.
It's time. It's time. It's story time with CEO Hayes. And I'm watching this segment, and I'm looking at it, and I'm paying attention to the fact that, okay, they mentioned the Montreal Screwjob. All right, they played some stuff from the Attitude Era, showing Shane doing his thing. They showed AJ Styles attacking Shane McMahon. They did so much because they're swerving us. What's going to happen? We got SummerSlam coming up. We got the reported brands, the draft or shakeup after SummerSlam. We got reported John Cena going over to Raw mainly, working some programs over there. So this is what what I'm painting for you guys. They're throwing us off the scent. Shane McMahon is going to back and help AJ Styles win. We're going to get the formation of the club. He's going to trade for AJ Styles' buddies. We're going to have the club over on SmackDown. Then what we're going to get is Nakamura's winning that title. What better way? What better way to set up the feud between AJ Styles and Nakamura than AJ being the GM's champ to go and take that title off of Nakamura? It's story time with CEO Hayes. Let me see your reactions to that. It's ridiculous, but you know what? That's the point of it. Story time with CEO Hayes is not to make sense. It's to cause you guys to argue. Go ahead. JB, you're shaking your head.
The reason I'm shaking my head is not because that story was stupid. That was freaking brilliant. But that's the reason why it will not happen on WWE television. Now, if we were talking about ROH or New Japan, I can guarantee that'll happen. That was magnificent storytelling and booking. I would love to see that. But I don't think that's what we get. I do think we eventually do get AJ Styles and Nakamura in a more lengthy process, feud, but I don't think it's going to be done like that, although that makes all the sense in the world and perfectly fits. And it's a total swerve because everyone's thinking, oh, yeah, Shane McMahon's going to screw AJ. But it's not. It's not. But who knows what WWE does.
D-Will, what do you think? Reaction.
JB, you say this is perfect storytelling, but for who?
For me, the only one that matters.
Exactly. The people that are familiar with their past. I don't know how close these guys are. I don't know their relationship. The last time Finn Balor and AJ Styles were on screen together,
he was throwing shade. It's not Finn. It's not Finn. It's everything that I booked has been told on WWE TV. I'm talking about Gallows and Anderson, which they were together on WWE TV. We saw them split on WWE TV, and then the Shane McMahon and AJ piece. Everything that I'm saying is strictly I made sure that I kept out anything from Japan here.
Not only that, think about it. On SmackDown, AJ and Nakamura are pretty much two of the biggest guys on the show. And the club part that he mentioned, they were already a thing anyway, so they're just rejoining. And Nakamura and AJ are two of the biggest guys on the roster on SmackDown, so it makes sense.
Okay, because I'm thinking you're bringing everybody that was in that New Japan stable over, because including Finn doesn't make too much sense to me. But I guess if you're going to bring Gallows and Anderson over, there's nothing I can really say to combat that storyline. Unless you're going to, if you're going to try to play a history between Styles and Nakamura, I don't know that either. The only history they have is their stare down at Money in the Bank.
Well, more than that, they've shown them backstage buddying up. They've done some stuff to plant seeds. Yeah. So not much. Yeah. I'm by no means am I saying they've done enough. I'm just saying that for them they probably consider that they've sold the fact that they're buddies, which, you know, it is what it is. Redneck, you're being awfully quiet. What were your thoughts on story time with CEO?
Well, I just had to let these two guys finish because I need to, one thing before I can co-sign on what you're saying, Hayes, and maybe WWE Creative might co-sign on what you're saying too. What's Shane McMahon's motivation for trading for these guys and getting the club put back together and for helping AJ win the title? What's Shane's motivation for this?
The fact that he's just strictly a McMahon and he wants it. He's sit there and he's watched Bray have this title. He's watched John Cena have this title. He's watched Jinder Mahal have this title. He wants to have control over the WWE title. That's at least my mindset of it. Or it could also be, this can add another layer, but I don't think they'll go to this well again, is that if you notice, almost every time John Cena's out there, Daniel Bryan gets involved. What if they start playing the riff? What if Daniel Bryan backs John Cena, Shane McMahon backs AJ, we get one more match between them, John Cena's fed up with this shit, he goes over to Raw. All right, we get free agent John Cena who's free to do whatever the hell he wants to do.
I mean, I can see that. I mean, I could also kind of see him like what you're saying. If he wants to kind of put a little faction together, it's kind of an authority storyline. Like you said, they probably wouldn't do it, but they do authority storylines all the time. So why not give Shane McMahon the cool club? Because Shane McMahon kind of is the cool kid in everybody's eyes compared to Stephanie. Give him the cool club with bring over, like you said, Gallows and Anderson and put AJ with them. I'm always down to see the club. I'm always down to see the Good Brothers. The Good Brothers toured through North Carolina all the time. So young Redneck got to see them at the old armories and stuff, wrestling for us kids. So I got a lot of respect for the Good Brothers and Bullet Club.
Plus, like, Bullet Club is, of course, it's this generation's NWO. And I just keep remembering. Remember when Eric Bischoff used to just do crazy shit as their, like, you can see Shane McMahon pulling off that role so well as the club is just doing their thing.
Well, absolutely. It's not this generation's NWO because it's done better than the NWO. It hasn't recruited every single wrestler that's been alive and then split into 18 different groups and tried to take over. They've been like Jericho. They've refreshed their member base. At least the ones that you see here in America all the time, they refresh those. I mean, Tama Tonga and Bad Luck Fale, they've always kind of been with the group, and they're probably always going to kind of be with the group until it dissolves. But it's not the new NWO because it's not run by a bunch of clowns and jabronis. These guys actually know what they're doing. They care about the business.
Well, that and the fact that they have a great booker in Gato and they don't give people like Hogan and Kevin Nash free reign to do whatever the fuck they want. As great as Kenny Omega is, he's great. who's to say that if he got complete creative control over his character, it just wouldn't go batshit crazy? Because you can't give people that much control while they're in the midst of it. Like, if Kevin Nash would have stepped back and probably did some booking, we may have been okay, but he kept interjecting himself. But that's a whole freaking show there that I can get off on, because I love talking about how Kevin Nash, as much people as want to say Hogan and Bischoff, was as big of a part as the downfall of WCW as anybody else.
Absolutely agreed. But that's a whole, I could get off on so many tangents when we're talking about WCW and the downfall and bad business moves and the way they gave people creative control, and I could go on and on and on about that shit.
God damn it. Yeah, that just, I was in a good mood after the awesome booking, thinking about WCW, because most of my life, I was a bigger WCW fan than WWE. I got really in. I was always a WWE fan because I've loved most of their talent. But I really got into WWE more than WCW probably like the last 2 or 3 years WCW was around. So that's just me. But
when it became complete shit.
Yeah, I was just like, you know what? WWE's been good. It's like, I never thought it was bad. I never was a WWE hater. I just preferred the WCW guys mainly. But yeah, once it started getting shit, I was just like, you know what, I'm done, fuck it. Like, I'm once Jeff Jarrett won the title, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm done with this shit. But anyway,
Russo,
so we
get, ain't had nothing to do with none of that.
What was that?
That's because Russo ain't had nothing to do with none of that.
Oh, here, throw we that out there. Here we go. I'm not even,
and
you know
God,
what,
bro.
By the way, check out the Red Zone for Bello's wonderful impression of Vince Russo. We just knew that you were going to pop up on the pod. You know, I thought you may popped up here in It Is What It Is Studios, standing right behind me. Like, did you mention Vince Russo? Please.
Did he?
Tell me you
wait,
just didn't.
Did he? Okay, my blood pressure is.
Gotta listen to the Red Zone, bro.
What did Bello say?
You gotta listen.
I'm gonna listen.
You gotta listen. Oh, gosh. You gotta go.
We talk about Russo on Smart Talk too.
I'm turning red,
which is hard to do since you're a dark complected young man. Let's move forward. we get what was said to be a grudge match between Jinder Mahal and Randy Orton, and I don't think, did anyone doubt what was gonna happen? We all knew Randy Orton was gonna go over. And then they have Rusev attack Randy Orton. You know, honestly, the match was fine. I'm not going to say the match is horrible. I just don't feel like there was a point to it. We know Jinder Mahal won the feud. Randy Orton getting this win back really doesn't do anything. You could have had him go right into a match with Rusev. I don't think I needed to see Randy Orton get his win back necessarily. But they gave it to him. And then he gets attacked by Rusev at the ramp as he's walking out. And that's what ends this show tonight. D-Will, coming to you first as you shake that redness off. What are your thoughts on this main event?
Oh, okay, I'm cool now. I put some ice on my face. Alright, I think this is the best match that Orton and Mahal had together. In my opinion, there were no shenanigans, so I thought these two, the crowd was into it moderately, so I thought it was a pretty good match between the two. I didn't expect Orton to win because I expected interference from Rusev to cost Orton the match to kind of set up their SummerSlam match. And to try to keep Mahal look somewhat strong and credible and reputable for as an opponent for Nakamura. So I don't agree with how this show ended tonight.
Redneck?
Well, they kind of foreshadowed how this show was going to end tonight last week when those guys had a match with each other, kind of starting that feud off. This match was ruined for me because I saw two things on Twitter. People were just kind of, you know, fantasy booking, and they booked that Orton would probably go over because the Singh brothers weren't there, and it's just kind of a regular match that's not for the title, and he'd been losing to Jinder the whole entire time. And then also the whole fact that we hadn't seen Rusev the whole entire show. I saw somebody tweet that out too. They're like, oh, I bet Rusev comes out at the end and does something. And of course, Rusev came out and did something at the end of the show. I didn't want to see Orton versus Jinder again anyways. I'm tired of that. I've already seen all that. I wanted to kind of see something different. But, it was a good match for what it was. I'm ready to see Orton and Rusev. I think that's going to be a good little feud that can happen between those two and kind of put Rusev back in the spotlight, at least having him feud with Orton.
Yeah, I definitely think he deserves that. Rusev is a hell of a guy. And I think that Rusev goes largely – I wouldn't say completely unnoticed, but I think people forget just how good of a talent Rusev is because of some of the
stuff
they
underrated.
Do with him.
Highly underrated.
I honestly want to see Rusev get a world title reign at some point. You know, we have Jinder doing it. Rusev could have did that whole gimmick and done it much better. I just don't understand it. But you know what, Jinder's title reign, I've honestly enjoyed most of it. The matches have been okay, but you know, I've enjoyed it for what it was. It was a title reign to get us between the two bigger pay per views, and he's gonna probably lose it at SummerSlam. We're gonna get a different champion to build for the rest of the year. But JB, any thoughts here left on this main event?
Yeah, before I go into that, just something real quick what you said. I truly, truly believe this run by Jinder was supposed to be Rusev's run. I said it back then, and I feel it. But Rusev got injured, and then the whole thing with India, because the Jinder thing wasn't something planned. That was like a last-minute thing that happened, and I truly believe Rusev was supposed to be that guy. I think they wanted someone foreign, and they wanted this angle to be run, but they switched the last minute only because of the India market. Now, regarding the match tonight, there was positives and negatives. The positive was the match I thought was really good. One of their better, if not their best match of the three or four times they've met. The negatives for me was everything was so damn obvious. I was one of those people Redneck was talking about that tweeted out. All the check marks are there. No Singh brothers. It's non-title. And Randy Orton, he's definitely going to get back the win because it's 50-50 booking. Well, in this case, it's like 75-25% booking. But there's no way Mahal is going to go over four times on somebody of Randy Orton's caliber. It's just not going to happen. So I knew he was going to win. I also knew that Rusev was going to come out at the end because my wife and me are watching this, and I'm saying, like, they're lengthening out this end. Normally they go to the credits and then we go off air, but it was just on and on, and I'm like, Rusev's about to come out, and just like that, Rusev comes out. So I don't understand what the point of this match was. We've seen that more than enough. Just get to Rusev and Orton, but I said it last week, I'll say it again this week. I could care less about Rusev and Randy Orton. I'm not big on either of these guys anymore. At one point, I was. I've not been that way with Randy Orton for a long time, and Rusev, it's the same way. Hopefully this feud brings me back, brings me back to them. But as of right now, I'm not really interested at all with either of them.
Damn. Well, there you have it. There you have it. Is there anything left on this show before we get ready to go into our closing thoughts and plug where people can find us that anyone wants to talk about? Go ahead, JB.
Just one thing. We skipped over it, but not really a thing, but Nakamura's segment. Again, this was another stupid booking decision. They know Nakamura's weakness is talking. Why the fuck would you have this man do a talking segment? Yeah. Why would you? I could understand like a video package, and I know he needs to get to talking more and more. But why not do like a pre-recorded segment or I don't know. I don't even know what to say. But why? That was the wrong move for me again. I could be wrong. I don't know what you guys think.
Here's what I want to throw back to you. Other than Paul Heyman, because he's the easy choice. If you can pick anybody, any manager right now in wrestling, it could be from any promotion, who would you stick with Nakamura?
Oh, from any promotion?
Any promotion.
That's a little tough. Based on what you just said, I just now realized how horrible the manager stuff is in today's wrestling. There used to be a dime a dozen back in the day, and they were all great. Now it's just, I can't think of anyone, honestly.
Can I answer that while JB thinks?
Sure.
Go ahead.
I would just take a regular Asian American man, make sure he's significantly smaller
than Nakamura,
and then just have him be his translator.
Damn.
Sonny okay. Ono. Jim Cornette. No, that's not good. No.
Vince Russo.
I was about to say that.
Redneck.
Donald Trump could always come back and be his translator.
Who?
Oh, Donald? God. Now Bello's going to pop up on this. Did you mention my Lord and Savior? Did you mention the Emperor? Nonetheless, Redneck, who would you pick?
God, I don't know. Give him, and put Enzo with him.
I like that idea.
Just put Enzo with him. Not to say that they have similar style, but they do kind of have their own style, their own flair. So they are similar in that aspect. I would honestly love to see the two of them be together. I think it would be a great pairing, and it would be something for Enzo to do. And him teaching Nakamura like our slang and the kind of words and stuff that we use in this day's nomenclature would be something beautiful. But I'll be honest with you, I took Japanese for like 3 years when I was in high school, and the teachers, they brought them over from Japan. So there was one day we were actually teaching them like slang, like what up in the cut and stuff like that meant. And he was like trying to like, he was actually trying to figure it out. So we hoped that he went back. But no, Hayes, I see that face that you're making. The one teacher, he actually listened to MC5, and he liked to listen to MC5 because he said that I like the MC5, but they like to say motherfucker, motherfucker. That's a true story.
Oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, you have me
more of like a comedy act then.
True.
You have me fully,
not
like
necessarily. If it, I mean, not because was Enzo and Cass really a comedy act? I mean,
Enzo. Enzo was.
Here's the thing: if you took, and this may some people may
Corey Graves.
Ooh,
that's a good one too. I can see Corey Graves as being a good manager.
But
Corey Graves would be
not
a great
take
manager.
Yeah,
but
he'd
be
but
more of a
take
heel
him off
manager. I could see him with Nakamura.
That's the problem. I can only think of heel people. I can't think of a face
here,
manager.
Here it is. There's only two answers to this, and I went in with one answer, but now
Titus. Just kidding.
There you go. No, seriously.
Really?
Seriously.
Titus, oh yeah.
That was
seriously
a joke on Nakamura, man.
No, it's not.
Come
look,
on.
Keep in mind.
Don't downgrade
them,
man.
He's been mentoring Tozawa. So there's that connection there. He comes over to SmackDown in the shakeup, and he's just like, you know what? I learned some Japanese from Tozawa. I'm gonna go rub elbows with Shinsuke Nakamura. But I like the Enzo more. Like Enzo would be a great manager that can take bumps if you don't have to completely strip away the over the topness of his character. But if you made him a little bit more serious when he's out there cutting promos for Enzo, but still kind of throw those. Funny, because Paul Heyman does that. Paul Heyman is serious. He stands in there straight up. He delivers stuff, and he'll send chills through you. And also, sometimes you say some stuff like this. I can't believe he just said that. Enzo, I'm saying this right now. If Enzo stopped wrestling because he's not a good wrestler and focused on becoming a manager who can get involved in matches, he would be the best manager in the business right now, this any side of Paul Heyman.
He'd be the closest thing to Bobby Heenan that we've had since Bobby Heenan left the business, and because Bobby was one of the first ones that was taking bumps like that.
So, not to sway, but CEO has my mind rolling right now because now I'm like on this Titus train because I could see a lot of good things. Like he has Tozawa, he has him. Give him Kenta. I mean, give him Hideo Itami. Now this guy's just a scout. He's just scouting people in New Japan. Buy him a ticket. Let him show up at an NJPW event. They might not show him on TV, but the fact that he shows up there, just sitting there and, you know, with his suit, like, you know, handing out business cards. Like, yeah, I'm here to scout all these motherfuckers right now. They're all coming to WWE, all the good ones. That would be amazing. Will it ever happen? Obviously not, but I think it would be amazing.
Like, see, so
thinking about that connection, I know that their cookouts are going to be lit. They're going to have the most bomb ass food. I'm just on that alone, I'm going to that tailgate party. Sign me up.
If you're Titus and you're trying to wine and dine Nakamura to join Titus Worldwide, where are you taking him and what are you doing to try to get him to join Titus Worldwide?
Popeye's Gold chicken. Finger. You just take him to Popeye's. You make sure the lady from the commercial is there so she can give him the like you just
that new honey chicken that they got out there.
The honey
chicken. She gets him a nice hot fresh plate of honey spicy chicken.
You just and she just, hey darling, and you just you completely sell him on the fried chicken.
You know, me and CEO gave totally different. CEO said Popeye's and I said Goldfinger. That's just, you know, just,
dude. Yeah. You know what? I don't even
that's
know what Goldfinger is. What is Goldfinger? We don't have those here.
Well, D Will is on the right path. What did you say, D Will?
I said just go full rush hour with it. Make them a tag team. Shit.
Oh, you said rush hour. No.
That's even better.
Oh yeah, I didn't think about that.
That's even better. That's a whole other thing.
Get Jackie Chan.
You know what? If a writer from WWE listens to this podcast, we just gave them a full like 6 months worth of booking here. There you go.
Just
like,
for Titus. Just for Titus.
He doesn't even like Titus, and he's given booking for 6 months.
You must not have been listening to Red Zone. Now I'm now officially like probably one of the biggest Titus O'Neil fans.
Really, you bought into the brand.
I'm fully invested in Titus brand
Worldwide?
Stock. Yeah, I got that stock.
I got a great question to ask you. Since we're talking about them being a rush hour tag team, what of a black man's does he tell Nakamura not to touch?
Oh, the radio.
No. You can't use the radio because that's the line from the movie. What of a black man's is he telling Nakamura not to touch?
Oh, Jesus.
It's got to be something PG.
Tazawa.
It could be like a t-shirt. I would say a title, but we know Titus isn't getting anywhere. But if he had like a title, it would be like, you don't touch a black man's title. That would be a perfect line.
Or a Gucci belt.
Or chicken wings and make it a KFC promo.
There you go. See, no, Popeyes. See, as you're at Popeyes, that's perfect. Sorry. While you're at Popeyes, Nakamura loved his honey chicken so much that he reaches over for Titus O'Neil's last piece of chicken. He slaps his hand. You don't touch a black man's chicken. Bam. That's it. Done. T-shirts.
And
print them
out. After they do that a couple weeks, then you have someone that's willing to share their Popeye with Nakamura, who is Enzo. And now you got another couple weeks of booking right there.
There you go.
That's how they become managers, because Enzo comes in and starts sharing his chicken. He's like, you want to be with that guy who's not going to share his chicken with you? I'm here to share my chicken with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're booking Popeye's chicken for WWE.
There you go.
Someone book it.
There you go. Well, this podcast, we've done a little bit of everything here. This has been fun, even though, you know, we're all kind of down on SmackDown. Redneck, as the guest tonight, this isn't your first time on the Blue Zone, though, but as the guest, I'm going to give you the first Whoppit. Telling the people where they can find you and also giving us your closing thoughts for tonight.
Closing thoughts. You guys are in Toronto. You're not in Montreal. Let's get it right there. Commentating desk. Like JB was saying, JB's been in my head all night. Like a lot of the stuff that he's been saying first, I've been thinking it and he's been saying it. And it's crazy. Like, get out of my head, JB.
Tell the people where they can find you, Redneck.
Well, I'm not going to give the long, like, 3-minute rant about For the Love of Lucha like I did yesterday. You're going to have to listen to Red Zone to hear that rant and find out how great of a show that is. But you can find me at Wrestling Redneck. That's R-A-S-S-L-I-N-R-E-D-N-E-C-K. I was about to drop a little rap on you and be like, it's R-A-S-S-L-I-N R-E-D-D-Neck, like that, you know. But I guess I'm out of here, guys.
JB, tell the people to get more advice from the prodigal one.
Before I go into my Twitter stuff and whatnot, I do want to say regarding my closing thoughts. I do have a
jobber of the week.
My jobber of the week is the entire writing team for SmackDown. For all the shit they did with Charlotte and Lana, for Carmella missing out on the chance to cash in the Money in the Bank, for Nakamura being in a talking interview, the writing team of SmackDown is absolutely the jobber of the week, the entire damn writing team. And I can be reached on Twitter at the P1JB or email me at WWPNJB. And shout out to all the great shows going on. I know Redding didn't want to go into, but really, if I went into it or CO went into it, we'll be here all night. We have so many shows, so many great shows. And that's one thing I love about our network. We have so much different variations to all of our stuff. So I know CEO is going to get into it. I don't want to take up too much time. But also, I just want to mention real quick our YouTube channel to go ahead and visit us on YouTube. Just look up The WWPN. It's basically youtube.com/TheWWPN. And thanks, everybody, again, for all the support. And I'll give it on over to D. Will/Misery Williams/Dimitri/John Cena Lover/whatever else.
me. All right. We are now ready for the song lyric of the week. Everybody's favorite new segment. Let's get into it. This week, we have Hot Problems by Double Take. Hot Problems by Double Take. me. Okay. I got the look. I got the butt. But those things don't make me a slut. Boys call me stuck up. Girls say I'm conceited. On behalf of all hot girls, those comments aren't needed. Just because I'm pretty. CEO, why are you looking at me like that? I have to be dumb. I don't care about wits. I just want to have fun. People start rumors and say things about me. Funny thing is, I didn't go to the party. You can find me on Twitter at Misery Williams, MISERYWILLIAMS. That's me.
How do I follow that up? Like, what? What in the world? What just happened? Like, I have
wait. Was that his unorthodox opinion too?
No,
that was highly unorthodox.
That was his Black Genius segment.
Oh God! What? What just happened? Like, I seriously don't know.
What alternate fucked up Vince Russo universe is this are we in?
Oh, yeah, he booked this shit. I am CEO Hayes, and my closing thoughts now are, see, this is what happens when you don't give money to a young black man with dreams, is that they wind up on wrestling podcasts living out their dreams of becoming a famous singer. So yeah, donate to your local Boys and Girls Club, and you can save a young podcaster early on. But more importantly, I am CEO Hayes. You can follow me at CEO Hayes. That's at CEO HAIZE. This has been the Blue Zone. Done it again. This is a Wrestling World Podcast Network production. Also, iHeartRadio. Yes, people. Yes, people. We are on iHeartRadio. Ask JB already plugged the YouTube channel. We're everywhere. But the sweet spot where you can find all our lovely content is BWWPN.com, which is a certified G-spot for all things Wrestling World Podcast Network related. This has been the Blue Zone. I'm CEO Hayes. For JB, Rasta Redneck, and Dimitri, we're out.